D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 380, show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I am your host, Jeff Alish. I'm joined today by Al Chrisman. Hey, Al, how you doing?
Not bad yourself.
Good, good. Now, Al, he works in corporate IT, and what he's doing is he's been on a couple Podnuts shows. He's been on the server show and sharing information on servers. I think that's what he works on during the day. Hopefully, we'll be able to find that out. And then we'll talk about some things that he's doing and some things that he's looking to do in the future. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and basically how you got started in corporate IT?
All right, okay. I work for an IT solutions company in the UK. I basically got into IT. When I got my first computer, when I was about 8 years old, Amstrad CPC 6128. I don't think they were that popular in America. Had that for a couple of years. Then when I was at school, our high school in the UK, they had Macs and got into Mac quite heavily. Then when I got to decide after what I wanted to do for college, I got into electronics. When I was at college, we were doing my electronics. They introduced me to Windows PCs, and that was the time of Windows 95. So that's when I found out about computers. This when I first got my first PC, it was a Pentium 1 150 megahertz MMX with like 128 mega RAM. So that's when I basically started tinkering it, and I found out about computers. And after my 2 years at college doing electronics, I didn't really want to get it. Got really theory, so I decided to have a go at computers. And I actually got a job, luckily by chance, at one of my friends. He was an IT company, and he was looking for someone like a bit of an apprenticeship. So I went to work for him, and he just worked for small businesses for 1 to 5 computers, and I basically started working for him, and he got me into IT working with Windows XP, Windows 2000, and basically outgrew my job there and wanted to do small computer repairs and small businesses when I wanted to get into the server stuff. That's what I was really interested in. And got a job on an IT help desk for a dental company, which basically looked after. They brought dental practices, and they converted their. We put our own computer system in there. When I started, we had 50 practices, and then when I left, we had 150 practices. So I was basically worked my way up there, wow. And so it was basically. What they were is that they were just on the street practices. We overtook them. We basically brought them out, and we put our own IT solution there, and it all reported back into one big database. And I basically designed that solution for them. So
okay,
what happened next is that they basically ran out of money because they pay, and I basically got made redundant from that and went on to a couple more jobs. And to where I'm working now for a Microsoft Gold partner, an HP Gold partner, where I'm a solutions architect for this company.
Oh, very cool.
So my daily job is that I have to, the salespeople go out and sell stuff, and I have to go and put a solution together for them. So for like in the last week, I've been working on a 4-host VMware solution which is basically their virtualization. They've basically got loads, about 100 physical servers, which are all running Windows 2003. And it's actually cheaper for them to, the hardware is basically, my company I work for provides hardware support. And these are like 8, 9, 10-year-old machines now. So it's actually cheaper to provide them with a new solution on this new VMware platform. And that's the P to V, the service, which basically means is what happens is that you can run a program on it, and it basically converts it to a virtual machine. So what happens is this is what this product, when they've got, it's all on the sand, basically. Sorry about that. On the sand, basically.
Okay.
So this is basically a storage area now. So I'm just rambling now. Sorry.
No, you're fine. So you said 100 virtual machines. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, they've got 100 physical machines at the moment.
Okay.
And we're basically, which is about, I think it's about 8 racks. And we're basically consolidating it into 1 rack.
Wow.
So
that's definitely going to be cost savings and energy estate and everything else. That's great. Okay. So you're putting together these solutions for this company.
Yes.
And basically you're going to save them money.
Yes.
Okay. That's great.
So it's quite a good solution. So it basically means that it's basically 4 physical hosts and they've basically got 2 6 core processors in them. I can't remember what the correct spec is. They've got 96 giga RAM in each of those blades, so each of those servers. And then the back end of it is like where the virtual machine don't actually get saved on those physical hosts. They actually get stored in the SAN, which is like basically a massive array of disks, which is like 24 terabytes. So it's a lot.
24 terabytes. That's, oh my gosh, that's huge.
Yes. So I'm basically putting a solution together. So I'm basically just doing, I've got basically, if you look at my Google Plus profile, you'll see the actual it's set up in our demo suite at the moment, and that's been packed up on Friday, put on the pallet, and it's going to be sent over the weekend. And then I've got to travel next week about 500 miles to actually go and install it on site.
So you're setting it up, or you're putting the proposal together, what you're going to do, and then you're physically going there and you're setting up these servers and condensing these 100 servers down into basically four physical hosts with all virtual machines on each of those hosts.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then once we've got them on the virtual, they're running basically Windows 2003 basically on those servers. But once we've all got them on this infrastructure, it'd be a lot easier to migrate them to Windows 2012, basically, because at the moment all the servers have only got 100 megabits connection, whereas all these servers have all got 10 gig coming out the back of them. So
okay, network speed. Gotcha. Wow, that's awesome. Well, that's a great career starter. Started in computer repair and then kind of worked up to, you know, basically creating solutions for other companies. And that sounds like a lot of fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't like sitting around. When I first started my first job, when I was saying we went to dental practices, I was basically working on the help desk.
Okay.
And when each practice had a Windows 2000 machine with a PCIe modem inside of it, dialing up to the internet to collect their emails. And that's what I started off with. But then as the company knew that I wanted to grow, I kind of put all the solutions in for them.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So what types of things do you work on now? I mean, what's some of the things that you've been working on here lately for your company?
Well, a couple of things, as I was saying about the virtualization project, that's quite a big one. All I'm doing is basically putting the kit in for them, showing them how it works, and they're going to actually do all the P2Ving for them. So I'll just hand it over to them and then they can do all the rest of it. I've been working on a number of Windows XP to Windows 7 migrations. I know that a lot of people have been talking about that, doing 1-2s. My product I've been doing that, which does finish, is actually migrating 100 machines in one, well, not one go, but coming up with a proposal of how to do that. That's using a Windows deployment toolkit. Have you heard of that before?
Yes, I have. I had it loaded on my machine at one time just to play around with it.
Yeah.
And it's beyond my scope right now.
Yeah. So that was quite fun to do, because we had to basically, it was for a college, and they had 100 machines over 2 sites, and they I had to go around and work out, because no one basically knew what was on these machines. They knew they were XP machines. So half of my problem was I had to do some sort of inventory scan on those machines and see which ones could actually run at Windows 7 and which ones couldn't. So that was quite good. There's a number of tools that Microsoft provide you for that, which is, it was basically the Microsoft Assessment Toolkit. But but it wasn't that good for what I wanted to do. It basically said that anything could run Windows 8 or Windows 7, even like a Pentium 4 with 1 gig of RAM. And like, that's no way you're going to be able to run Windows 7.
No. You know, and so, the other thing I would say is any of these machines, in my opinion, any machine that is running Windows XP right now, they just need to be replaced with a new machine. Yeah. There's no reason to hold yourself back just by putting a new operating system on there. It's still not going to run that great. So what's your process for changing these machines over from XP to 7? What do you do?
Right, okay, so I'll let you to first of all, find out which ones we did. Have you heard of Spiceworks before?
No, I haven't.
No, it's a really good software. It's a basically a community site which you can go online and you can post a question and then people respond to it.
Okay.
But they also provide a thing called an asset tool, which is basically it goes off and does a network scan of your network, and it picks up all your PCs, scanners, printers, network switches. And I basically use that to audit all the PCs on the network. And that basically tells you, because all our kit we use is HP kit. So it gives you all the serial numbers, what processor in it, and what memory it's got in it. So what we were doing is, because it was a college, they can get the Windows 7 licenses cheaply. So what we did is we basically said that once we got it back, because we were basically, all the PCs, even the ones we issued a couple of years ago, which are capable of running Windows 7, because of the application they were running, would only work with Windows XP. So we basically just downgraded it to XP. So we were basically saying anything less than an Intel Core 2 Duo, we would replace. Anything above that, we would stick 2 gig of it normally came with 2 gig of RAM. We would stick 2 gig in RAM. Sorry, so it'd have 4 gig of RAM in total.
Okay.
So the process was, if it wasn't suitable for Windows 7, we'd just go in and replace it. Basically, we would just go in and you use the tool. I can't think of the name of the tool. I think I definitely found it on Podnuts. It's a tool is it Fabs Auto Backup?
Yeah, I use Fabs Auto Backup. Yeah, for backing up all the data on a computer and then putting it back just the way that you found it.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you can do things like profile wizard migration, but I like to give the user a fresh profile when the user logs on.
Right.
So we're just basically using that tool to migrate them. So if it's brand new PC, we just built them in the office using this Microsoft deployment toolkit, and we would just go on site, replace that one. If they were upgraded, if we could upgrade into Windows 7, what we'd do is we basically chose a couple of machines which were on the brink of, can we replace these with brand new machines or not? So ones which were dust on the cuff, we basically gave them brand new machines, and then we took them back to the office, put 2 gig of RAM in them, put the Windows 7 on them, and then we would just went back to site, and then we would just do it 4 at a time. So we'd go on site, replace 4. So we'd go in, go to the machine, copy all the data off using Fabs Auto Backup, then take the machine away, basically swap the machine with the Windows 7 machine, plug it back in, and then migrate the data back to the user. So we weren't actually migrating Windows 7 at the actual desk.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Because some people I know who are doing the same sort of thing of basically just blatting the machine and then putting Windows 7 back onto it. But the problem you've got is that I was really worried about that, is that something happens that you forgot to migrate something, they've got a PST file which is on the C drive or something, which isn't a normal place, or they've got some application which they only use once a year, and then they replace the PC, and then you find out that you've forgotten something. So at least if we were like leaving it a couple of days to make sure the customer was happy that they were happy that everything was on that PC.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we would blanket Windows 7 and then go to do the next 4.
So, okay.
But I wasn't actually physically doing it. I just came up with a way of doing it.
Okay.
And then we have techs go on site to do that work.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I've heard of different people doing migrations by basically taking hard drives, take a blank hard drive and pulling the old hard drive out, the Windows XP or whatever, putting a new hard drive in, putting Windows 7 on there, migrating the data over, and just keeping that information. And in that, sometimes they'll just move that hard drive onto the next machine, or like you said, keep it to the side just in case there was something that was missed in that migration. Yeah. And you've got that information. That's a good way to do it, in my opinion, because that's a safety net for you in case something goes wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. The other way, I've got another proposal coming up about they want 500 machines replaced, and that's a big task. It's for a hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and even for a hospital. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, and this thing I saw about Microsoft Deployment Toolkit it's really cool. What happens with that is it's a thing called Pixie Boot, which is basically what we do is that when we have a PC come into the network, we plug it into the network, boot it up, and you can press F11. And what happens is it's like basically sticking USB stick in, but it basically searches the network for a boot image, basically pushes out a Windows pre-boot image to the PC, and that basically boots the PC up into this pre-boot. And then it asks you, what do you want to install on this PC? Because what happened before is you have to prepare, you basically create a master image. That's what you have to do first. So you basically get your machine, you create a master image on that machine, and then you basically clone that machine onto my MDT machine. And what happens then is you have to sys prep it before you do that, because obviously with the GUI and stuff, and it makes you, once you've done that, you can then push that out to all what machines you want to push it out to. So for 500 machines, that's going to be the easiest way to do it on the desk, because we haven't got that much time for each machine to replace it.
Right. Now, so when you're doing that Pixie boot, so is it crucial to have the same hardware in all the machines, in all 500 machines?
What happens with the Microsoft Toolkit is that I normally have a normal 3 or 4 different images for different base images.
Okay.
So the hospital's got four different machines they've got. So, and the cool thing about this Microsoft Deployment Toolkit is you can actually inject the drivers after you created the image. So in this actual toolkit, you can say, well, I've got an image. You can actually inject drivers offline into the image, so that when it boots up, it will find the drivers and it will go, oh, I found this new hardware, and look in its window, wherever it looks for the drivers, go, yeah, I've got those drivers locally, and then it will install those drivers for you.
Now, how hard is it to set this all up as far as the Windows deployment kit and the Pixie boot and all that kind of stuff when you're setting it up at a location? Is it difficult? Or, I mean, I'm looking at it as, wow, you're like way over my head. But at the same time, I'm looking at it as, wow, that's kind of cool. I actually kind of like to even do that in my house.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's quite easy. Well, I say it's easy for me, but I've done it a couple of times.
Okay.
The best thing is YouTube. There's loads of video. There's loads of tutorials on YouTube, and that's where I basically just learned how to do it for YouTube. So it's basically, you have to have a server, Windows 2008 R2 or Windows 2012 server.
Okay.
And you basically install a thing called WDS, which is Windows Deployment Server. And that basically, part of setting it up, when you set it up, it basically sets up a Pixie server, Pixie boot server for you.
Okay.
So and it basically sets all the DHCP options for you as well. So that basically means that when a PC boots up and it gets a DHCP address, it actually tells you where the Pixie boot server is. So it will tell you what IP address to go off to go and pick that Pixie boot up from.
Okay. All right. Very cool. No, that, you know, it seems to me even like a, you know, even a medium-sized business environment. I mean, this would still be beneficial to having this set up so that, you know, when a machine goes down or something like that, you can have a new hard drive in place and, you know, have the machine find that image and boom, you know, you're up in a short period of time versus the way most of us techs do it. You know, we wipe out the hard drive, you format it, you reinstall your operating system with a disk, which takes forever unless you've moved up to the point where you're using a USB or something. Even then, if you go machine by machine by machine, that takes a long time. So I can even see the benefits even on a smaller scale.
Yeah, and it's funny because I had to do some work a couple of years ago. This is how I found out about it. It was for another company, and a guy went on holiday, and all he did was went in and set up laptops, and he was basically going there, set the Windows up, update it, then install the software. Well, I went in there when he was on holiday. I went in there for a week, and the IT manager wanted me to set it up so that when I got back, I showed him how to do it. How you can just basically plug a laptop in, press F11, goes off and does it all for you, puts Windows on for you. You can also configure it to auto installs all your applications as well. So within 2 hours, just sitting there, the PC sets it all up, the laptop's ready to go. He wasn't very happy though, because he liked going along and just doing poodling on and setting up. But with it in a corporate, it's nice that every laptop and PC is the same. So when the PCs come in, so if you've got 10 new starters at a new week, you need 10 new laptops, they're all going to be the same. And if a person has a problem and they send a laptop back to you with a knackered hard drive or with a problem with something, all you do is make sure they copy of their profile, or that using Auto's Fab Backup, just take a copy of all their backups and just pixie boots it, puts the image back on, and they're back to their company standard.
Very cool. So even when a machine gets infected or something like that, instead of necessarily having to go through the process of, you know, especially with some of these nasty infections, you might not be able to do anything for, or it just takes so long, it would actually be more time efficient to actually have something like that set up on premise. So that makes a lot of sense. That's very cool.
We did. If anyone had a virus, because it was this company basically processed credit card information, anyone with a virus on it, the PC would come back straight away and get blanked. We wouldn't even try bother to remove the virus. So we knew that it was safe.
That's a good point. And that's, you know, I think a lot of people have said over the years, that's the only way that you know that you're going to be 100% safe is by wiping the machine. Now, for your regular consumers out there, you know, it's like you kind of fight that battle where you go, you get it clean. And I think a lot of techs do a really good job of getting the machine clean. But when you're talking about credit cards or doctor's offices or anything like that, where all this patient information and different things are going, yeah, that's kind of a policy that you would have to have in place just to make sure that, you know, everybody was covered on both ends.
Yes, that's one of the other things I've been working on quite a lot of last year was basically SBS migrations, because obviously they stopped selling SBS 2011 last year.
Right.
So it's really odd in my job. You've got two ends of the company, like doing my 100 migration of 100 servers, physical to virtual machines,
mm-hmm.
and these 100 rollout of PCs too, working on these small sites with a one PC and 10, with sorry, one server and 10 PCs. So a lot of work last year, so they're running again these old hardware, which is like 8-9 years old, servers running SBS 2003. And obviously we migrated those to SBS 2011. Did about 8 of them last year over about 5 months. So by the end of it, I was getting quite good at them, because there's a lot of people with SBS migrations is that they basically, there's two ways to do it. You can basically just move the data from one SBS server to the other, but you have to go around and disjoin all the machines from the old server, and then just join them onto the new server. But the problem is that everyone gets new profiles. There's actually a nice way of doing it, where you actually join the SBS 2011 new server to the actual old SBS 2003 domain. And there's a migration plan of how you migrate all the email and all the people's documents and all the documents. And a lot of them had SQL database which had to be migrated. But I think the best thing for customers is if you actually go in and find out what they actually use first, and then kind of work out what they need to migrate across, and to get the customer's expectations right, so that they know when downtime is going to be, and go and plan things in their head.
Right.
Because a lot of my work is actually spending time planning. I have to come up with a document before I start any work. So this document we have to do is basically going to the site, looking what the customer actually requires, writing down what the customer actually requires and what like of action of work, what you're going to do. And then you can put in their constraints and what's not going to happen so that the customer knows what they are and what they aren't getting. Because sometimes they think, oh, you didn't tell me about this. We can't have this downtime now, but because it's all agreed in the document,
right?
No one can moan about it.
Right, right. That's a good plan to have in place. Getting them that proposal up front and saying, hey, here's what we're going to do, and you know, here's what you need to expect. So, because it, you know, it's amazing to me that a lot of companies still think that somehow you can do these migrations without downtime.
Yeah,
that's not in a realistic world. Sorry.
Yeah, when they've got like 100 gigs worth of data they want transferred from right. one server to the other.
Oh.
So, but I like to make sure I'm prepped before I do any work. So
right.
I spend a lot of time prepping because I've had a lot of good feedback from my customers. So I must be doing something right with it.
Right.
So I don't like going in the bull in the China shop and then to go, oh, let's go and take this PC out, put this new PC in. So I did quite a lot through those SBS migrations last year. I was called to talk to, I don't really get involved with many the actual desktops PCs. It's always really interesting listening to you guys and getting all the tips and what people use. I was going to ask, is this D7 thing? Do you use that a lot before, the D7 toolkit?
Actually, I use D7 too right now. I have been working with somebody who helped me to set it up, and he's actually coming up with a training class. Because D7.2 is one of these great tools that's, you know, obviously Nick Shaw is a sponsor of the show, and he has a great heart in the community with helping technicians out, and he's always available for help. But I'll tell you what, that tool is such a powerful all-in-one tool. It's amazing what it does. And it's just one of those things that once you learn how to use it, it can literally save you hours and hours of time on a PC cleanup.
Yeah, because with fab backup is what I got you guys talking about. That's what I found about that. Because normally I just manually export all people's shortcuts and everything. It saves
stuff. Right.
Heard people talk about D7, downloaded it, and I couldn't understand what it was all about. I was going... But that's what I was hoping, that someone was going to have to come up with some tutorial how to use it, because it seems a brilliant program. Everyone raves about it, but I'm guessing I don't get to use it every day. So
yeah, and it's one of those things where you really have to dig into it. And once somebody showed me a foundational setup, then I was able to go in, and once I had a basic understanding of what was going on, I could start using some of the different tools. Now, to be honest with you, there's a lot of Windows tools and different things in there. A lot of, you know, sysinternal stuff or whatever. And a lot of this stuff is stuff I use all the time. It's just I don't use it inside of a tool. I use it as an external thing on a USB stick. Once you load up D7.2, what's phenomenal about it is I don't have to go to any Windows commands anymore. Everything that I need to do, I can do inside of there. If I need to do Windows updates, I can click on Windows updates inside of D7.2. If I need to search for something, I could do that inside of D7.2. I don't have to use anything, you know, especially on an affected machine or whatever. So, but yeah, there is a tutorial. I think a class that somebody's creating right now that I was helping out with that we're going to bring some information to get people started in a good setup. And how to use the tool, because it is, once you use it, it's a great tool. You know, I actually used it in front of a customer, and I'm sitting there, and he's looking at me, and he's like going, and we're just chatting. And he looked at me and he goes, I like your job. He goes, you just sit there and just all the stuff just runs on the screen. I said, yep.
Because so. you can run it remotely, can't you? Because I think you're talking to I can't remember what the guy's name was the other week about that. He was basically, you can dial into the computer using whatever you, what's the product you use?
Instant House Call,
that's it, yeah.
Instant House Call has D7 remote support built into it.
Yeah.
So what, I think you're talking about Chris Carruthers, from Remote Support Tech Team. He uses that to remote into machines and then clean them up. And he's got a phenomenal process using that D7 was specifically made for Instant House Call. So he's got a process using that tool to where he can clean these computers up fast. You know, so you could still use D7-2 as a remote support tool, but that one just happens to be built into Instant House Call as part of it. So it's, like I said, it's a great tool to be using. Once you get past the hurdle of learning the basics of it, and it, you know, and I've talked to Nick for hours about different things that it does, and he's just, I ask him a question and he'll show me, and I'm like, oh, the light bulb goes on, and I get it. Okay. You can do some pretty cool things with it that, you know, his tagline, you know, automate, relax, get paid is true, because that's pretty much what it does. You know, a couple mouse clicks here every once in a while, and that's about it. So, you can have a clean machine or a maintenance free machine here in a short period of time.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, I do all my automation in my Windows server by using PowerShell.
Basically. Okay. Yep.
So, I don't really get involved with the cleaning of PCs. I try and keep out of that kind of thing. I do, part of my job is the consultancy side, but the other side of my job is I'm fourth line for the help desk guys in our office. So I kind of keep my ear out, and I can't keep out of it. If I hear a problem and I think the guys are going down the wrong road, I'm soon over there to tell them, to put them in the right direction to get
them. Gotcha.
Because I feel it's best if I put them down that way first, and then they come down to me like 4 hours later when they mucked up and where we could have solved the issue for the customer within an hour. Kind of thing. So,
gotcha.
So, I'll give you a bit of a story which might help someone else out. I don't normally do computer fixes for friends or family. I normally just keep it clean because once I've done it all day at work, I don't mind coming and tinkering at home with my servers, but I don't want to go spend my hours in the evening going around people's houses fixing them computers for them.
Right.
But I do it for my immediate family. One of my auntie's phoned up and she only phones up when she's really got a problem, and she phoned up and said, my internet seems to be really slow after 4 o'clock. And I'm going, okay. So I said, I'll come around one evening and have a look at it for you. And she said, she's got a laptop and a desktop PC. It's happening on both of them. So I said, okay, it can't be anything to do with the PC. So I plugged my laptop into the network, and again, it was in the evening, it was going slow. Websites were loading. Well, what she was saying, when she was going to Facebook, she'd get a Facebook, but the Facebook would mainly load, but none of the pictures would load, or the ads on the side weren't loading. So I thought, this is strange. So I spent ages looking around, plugged my laptop in, make sure the same thing. I was pinging things and I was getting drop packets. Did an NS lookup, and then sometimes I get DNS queries back, sometimes I wasn't. So I thought, okay, maybe we have this thing called ADSL in UK broadband.
Okay.
And what happens is that before you can speak to the ISP and go through the rigmarole of trying to explain to someone, yes, I do know what I'm talking about. I work in IT. I do this day in, day out. And you have to wait half an hour before you speak to someone. And then they have to pass up before doing the line. So anyway, I spent ages to search for, is it internal wiring? I'd have a spare router. So I took the router, of course, it was happening. And I know the one thing that people in the UK will ask for, the ISPs, is your internal wiring. You've got to plug the router directly into your master socket. It's basically the socket what comes into your house.
Right.
So I plugged it into there. Same thing. Spent about 2 hours trying to work out what this could be. And I thought, well, the problem we've got in the UK is that with the broadband is that after, in the evening, sometimes you get a contention period with like people coming home from school or coming home from work. I was like, hang on, maybe it's that. She goes, it's only started happening in the last 2 weeks, but it's fine during the day. So I basically, when I got to work the next day, I phoned up the people I thought, well, it must be a fault on the line. Perhaps it's at night time when there's so many people in the local exchange, it's causing it to go slow.
Right.
So I phoned up the first guy, logged a call, and I said, look, I tried all this. I work in IT, rolled through everything I'd done. So it's in the master socket. And I said, oh, yeah, I can't see any log out. I can see last night when you did the dropouts. Yeah, that's when I had the router unplugged and everything. And he goes, yeah, it's fine. He goes, well, run a basic line test on there. Nothing on there. And he said, right, okay, well, I'm going to have to pass up to the faults team. They're going to have to go away. So, oh, great. I'm really worried because the problem is that if they don't find a fault on the line, they have to send an engineer out to site. They charge you like $50 or whatever to come out to site to do it. And I don't really want to get my auntie charged $50 because I knew it wasn't a line fault because it's working during the day. So anyway, a couple of days later, they just didn't come back to me, started chasing them. And they said, oh, yeah, right, can you run a couple of these speed tests at this time, send us the results? And about a week later, I had an email from the guy saying, looks like your use is over her limit. And after she basically only had 10 gig limit, and after that 10 gig limit, they limit your connection. So after 4 p.m., they basically say your peak time is 4 p.m. to 12 p.m. at night. So he says, right, yep, she's got over a 10 gig download limit. So that was what it was.
Oh, my gosh. I would have never... 10 gigs, that's it?
Yeah, and she phoned me up day before and said, it's all solved itself. And it's because the billing cycle had gone round and it had gone back to zero. So she's now not gone over a limit. So, and it's only because she started watching all this, she started streaming. So you can go on and see, and you can see when she started streaming. So she basically signed up to Netflix and she's watching all these movies.
Right.
And she's basically on a really old package. And annoyingly, I told her this and she phoned up this morning saying it's gone slow again. And basically the tech guy said, we can change your packet. It was like $14.99 a month. And she said, oh yeah, we can put you onto an unlimited packet because you're on such an old package. But the problem is they can't, it doesn't, because it started, the new billing had already started. The account can't change until the next billing month. So she's now got to wait until the end of the month before she can get her internet back after 4 p.m. So...
And I thought our internet was bad. Holy cow. That's it. Well, you know, it's funny. It's not funny. Actually, it's very irritating. I had before we started the show today, I was doing a show with another person and my internet dropped out. Well, I looked over at my computer and I'm looking at the date and I go, it's the 31st. Okay. So they're renewing IP addresses. Because why would my modem restart? And I'm like going, why would you renew my IP address in the middle of the day on a Saturday, nonetheless? You know, why would you do it like 3 o'clock in the morning? So when they do this, I have a problem with my modem, and it doesn't matter what modem, connecting to the node. And when it happens, I have to sit there and unplug it and plug it back in. So long story short, I basically called my ISP provider up and I said, listen, I said, they're going through the standard thing, you know, pull off the power. I already did that. Reset. I already did that. You know, pull off the key. I already did that. Listen, I'm a technician. I deal with this stuff all the time. I said, I've already done all the things that you're going to tell me to do. I said, I've had a known problem for the last 2 years. I said, last year, you guys gave me 3 months free because the problem got so bad and they sent out a technician. So anyways, they're going to send out a technician on Monday. Well, I've already fixed it. Obviously, I'm online right now, so I'm back up and running. So when the technician comes out, I'm going to let them know. Then they're going to call maintenance. Maintenance is going to go down the street and look at the numbers on the node and notice that the wavelengths are off again. And they'll readjust those. And, you know, I'll be fine for 6 months, and I'll call them back again in 6 months when I have to restart my router again. it was just one of those days. But, yeah.
That's just something to look for. It didn't cross my mind to even think about.
Sure.
I didn't even think that she didn't, because most of our packages, like, I've got an unlimited
download exactly.
package. So, and she's on this old
10 broadband. Gigs, that's not enough.
I know.
Not in today's day.
I went home and checked mine. I did 330 gig last month. And that's just that. And it's just...
Wow.
It's just one of those things, if anyone else says, there's something else to check.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I'll put this out here because I don't know if I've said this before, but one of the other... things I ran into this last month is that when they went to renew the IP addresses, believe it or not, the ISP put out a bad batch, which means the IP addresses were doubling up and they were crossing over each other. So when they did that, I basically could get to Google, Facebook, and pretty much the rest of the internet I couldn't get to for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So when I called them up, they're like, well, no, you can get to Google. You should be good. And so I'm talking to a technician, not realizing that my IP addresses have been renewed and not thinking about it. And I go, well, it's not working. It's not working. So what I ended up doing was I have another modem sitting here in case this does happen that's already on my account. I just call them up, hey, switch it over. So they switch it over for me. And what that does, when you switch over to new modem, obviously it gives you a new IP address. So that fixed the problem. So when a technician came there a couple days later, he basically told me what happened. He's like, yeah, he goes, they sent out a huge bad batch of IP addresses. And I'm like, you're kidding me. And the person I talked to at the help desk, they were arguing with me. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to argue with me? I'm telling you, I can get to Google. I can get to Facebook. I can't get to anything else. There's something wrong. Well, it's got to be on your computer. It's on. Really? I said, well, it's on all 10 of my computers that are hooked up to the internet right now. So how's that possible? But that's a good one. Yeah. Check for if you have a bandwidth cap, which I think Comcast, I believe, does here in the U.S., but I think it's 250 gigs. Yeah. I'm with a company called Wide Open West, and they are unlimited. So they don't have a cap as of right now anyways.
Yeah, the problem I've got is that in the UK, there's only two providers of internet. Well, there's two back-end providers. There's BT, which is British Telecom, and Virgin Media. And for Virgin Media, you have to be in a certain area. That's basically like a cable connection.
Okay.
And the other, but they're only in big cities, whereas all the other little cities and towns in the UK is all provided by BT. And basically, they run the cable to your house. But then on top of that, you then have to go to an ISP. So you can go to BT, but there's so much hassle to deal with. If there's ever an issue, so there's an issue to the line, you have to go to your ISP, and then your ISP then has to go to BT. And that's the issue we always get. It's trying to go through a third person to get to
That's not easy to do. Cause yeah, when you're obviously they just think you don't know what you're talking about. And, so you got to go through all that.
Yeah. I don't basically try and belittle them. I always kind of try and talk technical to them. Like, oh no, you don't know what you're talking about. I work in IT. I kind of always kind of talk technical to them so that you talk technical jargon to them. I kind of understand. Cause some people kind of the first guy I spoke to wasn't very happy at all. He was reading from a sheet. Didn't know what he's talking about. But the second guy goes, yep, I know what you're doing. Let me have a look on your account. I was talking about what's the radius logs happening. I'm saying, doing NS lookups, pings. And he goes, oh, yeah, you know what you're talking about. Going, yeah. He goes, it's for the first guy going, so are you sure you haven't got a virus on your PC? He's like, no, I tried three different laptops. My laptop doesn't normally work, kind of thing. So.
Right. No, that's a good point. Yeah, and that's what's nice about having you should always try a different machine on a network that you're having a problem with. Because if you're having the same type of problem, then you can start tracing it back to, the router. You said, take on check or on click for that or take the cable off the router and plug it directly in the machine. See if you still have a problem. If you still have a problem there, okay, now you know it's probably in their lines or their modem or whatever, and you can kind of backtrace it from there. So that's a very good point. It sounds like you've got you've done a lot of different things. We've talked about some of the tools in different things you've used, some of the software and stuff you use. Do you have any preferences on the types of machines that you deploy for these businesses? Did you say HP?
Yeah, we're an HP Gold partner, so we have to sell HP.
Gotcha.
I'm happy with HP because it just works. I mean, I've always had problems with Dell in the past. I know that some people love them, but they were just like, you'd order a batch and with the same model number on the front, and that everyone's got a different motherboard in them. And then I had an issue with a load of capacitors blowing in them 8-9 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
So, I had a Dell laptop once, and it was like, and I had it for 3 years, worked perfectly. And then as about a week after the warranty went out on it, the GPU went on the board, and I was not happy with that. I was really annoyed about it. It went a week.
The GPU actually went?
Yeah, there was a batch. I can't remember what the model was. I think like D640 or something. It's a D640. It's a Dell Latitude D640. And there's an Intel one, a chipset, or an NVIDIA chipset. And the Intel one was fine, But I wanted the NVIDIA because it gave you the bigger screen resolution.
Right.
And there was like a known fault with it. And I managed to run with 3 years without having a problem. And then like a week afterwards, it was just, there's no way that Dell are going to honor that.
Right. Yeah, see, now I would have thought you were talking about HP because of the, you know, the whole DV series, the DV2000,
yeah,
you know, 6000, 9000s, yeah, all that kind of stuff. But those are more consumer level stuff. Yeah, the stuff you use,
we do like the Elite books and the Pro books.
Yes,
okay. We don't. Yeah, and I know that people on the Geeks have talked about those issues with the DV series, yeah, and stuff. So we just give business the business piece. We don't have amazing have a problem with it. So we're just selling with like i5 processors in them, 4 gig of RAM at the minimum, and we're actually started rolling out Windows 8 to some of our customers even now. So as long as their applications work with it,
right? Well, and I think that's one of the things that people have to understand, and I'm starting to see this. You know, everybody used to complain about different things like Windows Vista and stuff like that, and to be honest with you, I've never had a problem with any of these systems, but I've always hand-built my machines. So I've always had plenty of processor power. I've always had plenty of RAM. So I never ran into the issues that regular people were running. Well, I think really part of the problem is people need to stop being so cheap, and you get what you pay for. If you're going to buy a $300 laptop, you know, the way I look at it, if you get a year out of it, that's good. Mm-hmm. If you get more than that, that's awesome. But the reality is you really get what you pay for a lot of times. And if you're going to pay for something, as long as these companies aren't, you know, still putting in cheap products or cheap components inside their products that they're selling for a more premium price. But what I've seen is the ones that are selling for a more premium price, you know, they're better built, their fit and finish is, they're heavier, their hinges are made better. They're not all plasticky, you know, so I think a lot of that stuff does really matter, especially with, you know, we jostle these laptops and different things around. You do get what you pay for anymore.
Yeah. And I always recommend, yeah, like 4 gig of RAM minimum for anything, yes, these days. So that's what it with the XP migration, 4 gig of RAM. This is what we recommend. And because if not, you put Windows 7 on it and it's just so slow. If they've got like only 5200 speed hard drive in it, you can definitely tell the difference.
Sure.
You can definitely tell the difference. So,
yeah, I've got a machine downstairs, I think, that's a Windows 7 machine. Well, it was an old Windows XP. It was one of my hand-built ones. And I got 3 gigs of RAM in it. And it's an old, it's a single-core processor. It's running Windows 7 32-bit, and it runs it perfectly fine. It runs Ubuntu just fine, too. But, you know, that's I just use that for basically watching movies and stuff on mm-hmm. my other computers were working on them. So very low use case scenario, but
go ahead.
I was gonna say, so what other types of things did you want to talk about today?
The one thing I wanted to talk about is the reason I wanted to come on. I know you were looking for shows for people to come on. I'm actually looking at starting my own show, and that's why I wanted to come on there and kind of promote that. I'm looking because I said I'm from the UK. The problem we have is arranging the time difference. We actually mucked up, didn't we? I was an hour out.
Right.
So I was sitting at my desk an hour before going, did we arrange this? Did my emails get to him? So get to you. And so what I'm looking for is, because obviously I have a 2-hour drive backwards and forwards to work each day. Because where I live, there's not many IT jobs, so I have to an hour there, an hour back, basically.
Right.
And on that way, I was listening to the radio, but then I thought to myself, well, maybe I could listen to something else. Maybe I can listen to some podcasts with technical stuff in it. So, and at work, we were doing some. I mainly do Windows stuff, but we had to look after some Linux boxes, and I thought, well, I've always liked Linux, but I never really got into it. So I wondered how it goes. So I thought, hang on a minute, I'll just Google Linux podcast. And I came up with Linux for the rest of us. And when I came across Door's show, and then I found, when I liked that show, because I like the content of how this tutorials is talking about different things. And that's how I found about the Podnuts Network. And that's why I like the Podnuts Network, because everyone's just so down to the ground. And they're not the big shows where they're all this, with all the sponsors on it and everyone think they know what they're talking about. Kind of, it's just talking to real techs kind of thing.
Right.
So, and I like the hangouts you do and the Geeksters show. So, but then I kind of did some more research and tried looking for other shows to subscribe to. And I found out the Mike Tech show, which I really like listening to, and Tech Vets, and looked at things like Twit and found like the Security Now, which I really like.
Yes.
But I didn't really find any podcasts out there which kind of talk about what I did at work. So I wanted to kind of start my own show. Because I know we do the server show on the Podnuts network, and we do the Podnuts Pro, which I really liked. And the problem is I don't want to step on anyone's toe, and I want to make my own show up, which will basically be about talking about what I've talked about today, what I do in my job, talk about technologies, maybe doing a bit of tutorials, things like, and what I've done at work. So I'm looking for a co-host, because I think it's a lot better when you have someone you can banter off.
Right.
Because I could go off on one talking about something, and I could be talking nonsense, whereas the other guy can say, "Hey, whoa, are you going off on a tangent? Can you explain what a pixie boot is?" Because I think I might know what it is, but someone else might not. So I'm one of kind of looking for a co-host in Europe so that we can schedule it in the evening. And I haven't got to do it. Because I mean, it's like, it's now 10:45 in the UK, and I'm guessing what time is it over yours now? It's like,
it's about 6:15 PM.
Yeah. So with like people with door, they're on, I never remember which coast it is, but it's like even later. So when I did my cop with Josh, it was like 9:00 my time, 3:00 his time. So
right.
Like if I want to go on to the Podnuts meetup show, I think it's like 2 AM in the morning for me. So there's no way I'm going to have to get on that. So,
right.
So, and one of the reasons is that I have a problem with this. I don't stutter, but like at work, I'm fine with the presentation, sorry, the written work and the technical work. But if I have to go into a meeting, sometimes I go off on one, and I want to make myself come over better to the other person and try and explain things layman's terms more. And so I know what I'm saying in my head, but sometimes it doesn't come out what I want it to say.
Right.
And I think doing podcasts will help that, hopefully.
Oh, absolutely. I can attest to that, yeah, actually doing a podcast, it will help you, you know, kind of articulate what you want to say. And, you know, it's something I'm still working on. I have a joy for doing the podcast, but yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you want to know what you're saying and you want to get your points across. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's much better to do it, I think, with a guest, because for me to just sit there and talk about a subject, I could do that, but you know, I'm not as good as a Mike Smith, you know, from the Mike Tech show, who can sit there and he can banter on for hours and make a lot of sense, and just, he carries a show just fine. I'm not that type of guy. So, I like the interaction between two different people. I like the co-host, you know, host type situation. So, so basically you're looking for somebody in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's going to be based around what you do for your IT work, you know, mostly servers.
Yeah.
You
service
know,
virtualization. Yeah,
okay.
Service virtualization.
Kind of LAN, what you do. Okay.
LAN, networks, firewalls. But I want to give something back, because I mean, like people like yourself, you're doing your desktop, but you might want to get into like in a small business customer, with like looking after 5 PCs or whatever. And then I can give something back. So like I might do like I want to do, the first one I did really about IP subnetting and IP addressing and describing about routers and stuff, and like setting up guest Wi-Fi for customers and stuff. So, and I think that would, I think that kind of thing's lacking. So I hope people, and I've had a number of people say, "Yeah, that sounds really interesting." So you don't have the co-host doesn't have to be as technical as me. You could be working on the help desk and you want to make your way up the chain. This is a brilliant opportunity, because you can go away. I'm going to say, right, next week we'd all be about routing. You go away and find out some stuff about it. Come back and And then I just want to basically go off and start. Because it's nice to have a banter of what you've been at work last week. If you come up a problem like my thing with my issue with the capping, that might help someone else out in the future.
Sure.
So, and then, yeah.
Okay. No, that sounds great. So you're basically looking for a guest that you kind of can, not only that guest might be able to learn some things, but they, you know, kind of, you can kind of feed off of each other.
Yes.
And just have a good, you know, this is what I put podcasting to. It's, what we're doing right now, it's you and me sitting around in a garage, drinking an iced tea or a coffee or whatever you want, whatever your taste is. And, you know, just talking about work, talking about the things that we do on a daily basis. And hopefully in us sitting here talking about this, that's going to help other people out. And it sounds like that's what you want to do, you know, with your show. And that's awesome. So I'm going to put this out there that, you know, you need to get a hold of Al here and just, if you want to be, if you have any interest in being a co-host and helping out and you're over in the Europe area, man, that's, I would look forward to a show like that, to be honest with you, because there's things in there that I want to learn that I just, be honest, I just don't have the time to learn, but I can listen to a podcast and gain knowledge from that podcast. And hopefully, when I move up to that level where I'm maybe even dealing with small businesses and stuff, that stuff will help me out as far as, you know, doing things for businesses. So that's great.
Yes. Yeah, so co-host in Europe, really. I have no idea how often it's going to come out or anything. I haven't got a name for the show yet. Nothing. Like, I'm just trying to find a co-host in Europe yet. So okay. I can banter some ideas.
So what's the best place that somebody could get a hold of you if they were interested in doing that?
Well, they can email me at, which is Al Christman, that's ALCHRISTMAN @gmail.com. Or they can find me on Google+, is where I mainly hang out. So
okay,
just search for Al Christman, or put a link to my Google+ on there in the show notes.
Yeah, I will.
There's actually a blog post as well, which you can put in the show notes, which basically describes what I'm trying to do. So you can put that into the show notes as well.
Very
so
good.
That's what I'm going to do, basically.
Okay.
And that.
That sounds good. No, hey, Al, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us. And it's neat to hear your side of the business as far as putting things together and what you're doing. I find it very fascinating myself.
Yeah, I don't know if I have enough to talk about, because I know you guys always seem to, it's only normally techs like yourself coming on talking about repairing PCs or anything. So I sort of want to come on, just trying to gain some experience of talking and
sure,
getting on podcasts, so that when if I do start it, I'll do a promo once we've got the show announced and hopefully get it set up with Door, and then I'll let you know, and then we can,
there you go. All right, so I want to let everybody know, man, just if anybody has any interest in being a co-host with Al here, that's over in the Europe area, you know, for the time wise and stuff, definitely get a hold of him. And I will put, I'll put your email and your Google+ page in, that blog post in the show notes. And hopefully they can get a hold of you that way. And then I'm going to encourage you to definitely, if a podcast is something that you want to do, you're going to do it. So yeah, you need to find a co-host now. I get that. But yeah, definitely something that, I think
I brought the headphones and the mic now. So after Door's recommendations, so I've got to do it now.
There you go. So
I just got to find the courage, because I don't feel confident enough talking on my own. So because that's how I ended up on the Axel Service show. I actually did a response to one of the other shows. And it was just basically me talking to my phone, and then sent it to Josh and Door, and they said, well, why didn't you come on and do the show? So I waited for my microphone to turn up, and then we re-recorded the show. So, and it's a lot. I think I did like a 20-minute voicemail, but it was like an hour end. It was an hour show in the end, because we just dragged it out by talking more because Josh kept asking questions and stuff.
Sure. Absolutely. That's the way it works. Very cool. All right, man. Well, I appreciate, like I said, I appreciate you coming out on the show today, and appreciate all the stuff you're doing out there. And yeah, definitely, you know, somebody get a hold of you, and you know, hopefully that co-host is going to reach out here soon. And if you guys want to find me, you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish, or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on a show, or just would like to maybe share some show topics or anything like that, email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It just puts a little pocket or a little change in the pocket of the Podnuts Network to help bring these great shows to you. And I just want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.